Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today is author Homa Porcikari. This is Homa's second time on the program. She was here about a year ago to talk about her first novel, Lemon Curd, and following its success, she has just published her second novel, The Dawn of Spotty. So a little about Homa. She received a degree in business from Loyola Marymount University, after which she left to live in Paris for 1 year and attended the University of Sorbonne, focusing on literature. Multilingual, she has been traveling since the age of 5 and has experienced many different cultures. Homa has worked in various industries such as marketing, retail, banking, accounting, and fitness, but she always returns to her true love, which is writing. Homa Porcikari resides in Los Angeles, California, and for more information about her new book, you can go to thedawnofsadi.com or her main website, which is homaporcikari.com. So that said, welcome back to the program, Homa.
Oh, thank you so much.
So great
to be talking to you again.
Yeah. Oh, it's great to hear your voice again, too. Well, congratulations on putting out your second novel.
Oh, thank you very much.
So were you working on The Dawn of Spotty during the time of Lemon Curd, or did this whole project come after?
I started writing about it during Lemon Curd. It just, like, ideas would come to me, and I would simply write it down and save it. I didn't actually get to work on it till after my first book was done, but it just, as ideas flowed, I would write them down and save them, put them away, and figure I'll go back to it.
Well, so what were some of the original ideas? Was it basically the characters that were starting to form at that point, or was it the message that you wanted to get across with this book?
It was just bits and pieces of the story that would come to me, where it involved the plot and the character. It would just, I would just write it down. It really, I mean, had you looked at it, you may have not been able to make any sense of it, but this is how I usually work, is I write things down, and then I go back, and as I read different paragraphs, then I paste them together, everything starts to make sense. I know it's kind of strange. Not everybody works like me, but that's just how my brain works.
It's like a puzzle.
That's right. It's like a puzzle. It's like I put little pieces here and there together, and then at the end they just kind of come together.
That's so interesting. Well, would you say that there is some common threads between these two novels in terms of your personal writing style?
They both have very strong characters, both female and male characters, who are dealing with current events. I always write contemporary fiction about things that are happening within our society. And it has a romantic theme in both novels. So those are the things that they have in common. But they are different in a sense that my second book takes place in Saudi Arabia and then moves to the United States. So it's a bit of a different culture when you compare to my first book, where I'm talking about United States and England, which is closer to culture.
So why did you decide to set this new one in Saudi Arabia?
Actually, because I was trying to do some research on Iran, and what I noticed, it's so different from the Iran where I grew up, and it's almost like I don't really understand it. I mean, I do understand it because I've lived that culture, but we kind of had a secular society. I mean, religion was always important in Iran, but still there was some separation of church and state. And so when everything changed and I was reading up on it, and I thought, wow. So I thought, they have it really hard, this whole segregation of sexes and many things that are going on. And then I started researching about Islam and all that. And I decided to go to Saudi Arabia because that's where the religion originates. And my book really is not about religion as much as it's about protection of human rights and treating people with dignity and respect and giving that freedom of speech and, you know, just let people be. That's more what it's about. It's really not so much about the religious aspect of it because, you know, everyone's religion is very important to them, so I respect that, but you still need to give people human rights, and that's what it's about.
Okay, I see. And in this area, though, the human rights issue really is tied in very strongly to religion.
It is, because what happens is in any country where there is no separation of church and state, then you're going to run into human rights issues. And the reason for that is what worked thousands of years ago no longer works in today's society. So I'm just going to give you an example. Way back when there were different tribes in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia didn't even exist back then because it's only a 75-year-old country. So within that region, there were many tribes, and people would get drunk. So, and they would go and rape women from the other tribes. So they made alcohol illegal. Then they started covering up their women because they didn't want anyone to see what they look like so they don't get raped. So, and these are things that nobody ever questions or thinks about. You know, it's like pork. Well, pork is just like any other meat. And in many religions, like in the Jewish religion, I believe, and in Muslim religion, people don't eat it. Well, because back then, the pigs were dirty. People would eat them and get all sorts of diseases, and they would die. So they said, okay, we'll make pork illegal. So there's lots of stuff that people don't actually, they just don't want to think about it. They just want to accept it, and that's it.
It's almost like a brainwashed culture.
It is, but in any time you mix religion with civil laws, you're going to run into issues. And even governments brainwash people. And it's not just religion. Many governments brainwash people. I mean, look at Germany during Hitler time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, so anytime you don't question things and you just accept it, and you're going to run into issues because you really need to always ask, well, why is this law there? And why do I have to do this? But unfortunately, governments as well as religions, they don't want you questioning them. They just say accept it and do it. But the thing is, that's tyranny to me.
And pay your taxes.
Right. Pay your taxes and don't bother us. You know.
Right.
You know, do as we say. So.
Right. So, you know, with this new book, being the Dawn of Saudi, being set in Saudi Arabia, you know, you're talking about issues that are really global and worldwide. Will you take on the U.S. in one of your upcoming novels?
Yes. My next one is going to be about the U.S. Uh-huh. So much has happened within the past 8 or 9 years that everything just really changed. I think we need to step back and figure out why. And I have an idea that there are many, many things that started in 1930s, 40s, 50s. They were planned for today, for what's happening in our country today, and people don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
So those, you know, the fall of the dollar, it's not an accident. The banking, nothing is happening today is an accident. They all have been planned, and there's a reason behind everything that's happening.
I think more and more people are waking up to that, Homa.
I know it's fantastic. When I get on social networking, I've met so many intelligent people here. I was like, because, you know, and during the day, you know, when you're talking to people, a lot of people have no clue. But once I get online, I'm like, oh, my God, these people know so much. Mm-hmm. They're really smart.
Absolutely. And that, I think, is one reason why this information is starting to become so mainstream is the fact that we now have the Internet to communicate, and it is unregulated.
Right, but I believe that President Obama signed papers whereby he's allowed to shut everything down in case of an emergency. And to me, I'm sorry to say, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Because what is that?
That's frightening.
It's scary. Mm-hmm. It's scary because you're taking our freedom of speech away. You're basically saying that we're just going to cut you off so you can't communicate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is a violation of United States Constitution. It clearly, you know, it's a violation of the U.S. Constitution.
And it's a human rights issue as well.
Right. We are exchanging information. We're connected to the world, so we know what's happening. It's not like you don't get that mainstream media where they cover information, where, you know, the large conglomerates, they cover information. Reporters want to report it. They're not allowed to report it because if they do, they get fired, as many have gotten
mm-hmm.
fired.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you're on the Internet, you really learn about what's happening around the world, and you know, and many people are not happy about it, and they speak out, and we should speak out. Why should we remain quiet? You know, every country should give basic human rights to their citizens and treat them with respect and dignity, and you know, and that's just how it should be, to be fair.
Absolutely. So how have your life experiences, some of your traveling, the fact that you are multicultural, how has your life experience really kind of led you in this direction where human rights is such a big passion of yours?
I think it has to do with the fact that I love information. I love research. I love listening to people. So it's a combination of everything. I have this thirst for knowledge, but not the kind of knowledge you get at a university, because at a university, a lot of information is fed to you the way they want to feed it to you. Whereas when you're doing your own research and you're learning on your own, you learn many things that you've never been taught, and that just comes from life experience, from meeting people, talking to people, learning about how their countries function, how everything operates. Those all affect it, and, you know, the older you get, the more experience you have with connecting with other people.
The interesting thing about having your own personal pursuit like that, too, is you end up going into different directions and you meet people that you never would have, you know, ever planned on meeting, and they may have a piece of information for you, and things, you know, you end up connecting the dots after a while.
That is what it is. And it is true. You end up meeting people and hooking up with people that you would have never thought you would have anything in common with, and that you would actually be able to talk to that person. Because a lot of times the media distorts our reality. And, you know, we have, for example, I've met some people from Saudi Arabia, not in person, but have talked to some people from Saudi Arabia. And it's not at all what the television and what the newspapers portray. It's not at all like that. Before I was like hesitant, but my gosh, they're really great people. There's so many people within that country who do want change, who it's not like here, you know, we have to let them do what they want to do and the changes that they want.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really important to talk about it, because if we don't talk about it, nothing will ever change in the world. So it's very important for them to push for their own change, and for us, the outsiders, to support them.
To support their own
endeavors
and not tell them.
Right, not tell them what to do, but to support them,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be able to help. And if we can, why not? For example, you know, when there's a human rights injustice, Western countries should speak out. And, you know, if they're going to decapitate someone, or are they going to stone them to death? Or, you know, recently, about 4 or 5 months ago, this poor 10-year-old girl was forced into marriage to an 85-year-old man.
Oh, my gosh.
In Saudi Arabia. And this is not just a Saudi Arabia issue. It can happen in Iran. It happens in Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. But people are not aware because the information doesn't get out. Mm-hmm. You know, so she ran away to her aunt's house for 2 weeks. They went and found her and gave her back to the 85-year-old man. Now, the psychological influence is horrendous on this child, but no one seems to care. How many newspapers did you pick up where the information got out?
Yeah.
It didn't, you know. So these are things that is just, you know, it's...
mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in your research process, when you were connecting with people in Saudi Arabia or just in the process in general, what were some things that you discovered that you really didn't know before going into research for this book?
I guess like all of us, we have certain prejudices about various countries. So before my research, I thought they're extremely conservative, that everybody is like that. Their belief system is all the same. But what I learned is that it's not true. As I did my research, I was visiting a lot of sites for activists and bloggers, and I realized that they want certain freedom within their system. They want to be able to write what they want to write, you know, speak up their mind, to be able to vote on certain issues and to have discussions. So these are the things that I learned, which is the basis in any country. I thought that was great. There are many activists within Saudi Arabia who are pushing for change through writing their blogs. Many Saudi women are on Twitter, and I find them very fascinating. When I read their tweets, they're just so funny sometimes.
Really?
Really, really funny. I just laugh because they're very blunt and very direct.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody, like, ticks them off, they'll just tell them right off. You know? it's funny to read some of their tweets. So, yeah, so it's not what we think. But what we have to also realize is that what's freedom to them is different than what's freedom to us, because we're used to a certain lifestyle and they're used to a certain lifestyle. So,
and we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Homa Porasgari, author of The Dawn of Saudi, and you can find out more about Homa and her books and endeavors at thedawnofsaudi.com or homaporasgari.com. Do you think that women in Saudi Arabia have a realistic version of what freedom looks like for women in the U.S. or in Western culture?
I don't think they do, just as much as we don't have a perfect understanding of them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a perfect understanding of us. Unfortunately, a lot of Middle Eastern women see Western women as loose and easy, and they see them as promiscuous, but this is not the case. You know, yes, there are promiscuous people all over the world, but just because we have the freedom to do as we want, we don't always practice it. We don't do that, you know. I mean, I have a lot of friends who've had very few boyfriends. It's not like, but they have this image that Westerners, you know, they have thousands of boyfriends, and every night they switch boyfriends, and they're going out to clubs, and they're all walking around naked. Well, it's just, you know, it's not true.
I guess they're catching some American TV maybe late at night, and so that's
right. They see these women with G-strings on,
right.
They're like, oh my gosh, all the women over there are like this. Well, it's not true. We're nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas we have this image of them where they want to be covered up, and they want to be told what to do. Again, that's not true either.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's just, we need to really exchange information and be more understanding of various cultures.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you, Homa, why take on some of the heavier subjects that you do, and especially in The Dawn of Saudi? Why do you take that on and write a novel, write fiction, instead of just an all-out nonfiction account?
I've been asked that by several interviewers. Actually, one of the interviewers was telling me that how he suggests that I should separate the two and write nonfiction about heavy subjects and then fiction, romance about different subjects. But my style is different, because I think when you write nonfiction, you hit a certain audience. Not everybody reads nonfiction.
Uh-huh.
There are people who like fiction. So I'm trying to get that niche of people who prefer fiction and who read a lot of books. I want to give them content. I think it's really important. What I notice with a lot of books, there isn't enough content in the book. So what I would like to do is make, for that particular market, is to let people learn about the world around them, yet at the same time be entertaining so I don't bore them to death. Because some subjects are very dry.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're tired after a day. Are you going to pick up a heavy-duty book on the Quran? And
right.
You're not going to do that.
And not only that, I think that to weave it into a story, you bring a humanity to the heavy subject that people can comprehend and understand in a different way than if it's just a straight-ahead nonfiction.
Exactly, because when you're reading a nonfiction, you read it and you're like, okay, that's sad, you know, it's terrible what's happening,
mm-hmm.
and then you move on. Whereas when you're reading fiction, if you really get into the character's mind and you really feel what it's like to be that person in that country and to be dealt with in that manner, then you start, you know, questioning things and really feeling what they're going through. You know, you're a participant in the story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, we're getting along with our interview here, and before our time comes to an end, I want to make sure that you get a chance to just briefly tell our audience what The Dawn of Saudi is all about and who your characters are.
Okay. There's actually three major characters in The Dawn of Saudi. One of them is an American. Her name is Dawn Parnell, who ends up marrying someone from Saudi Arabia. And the second character, her name is Sahar Al-Hijazi, and she is a Saudi who is forced to marry someone she doesn't love. And then there's Jason Crawford, who owns this huge enterprise with his father. And somehow these characters connect in a way that he does a lot of business with Sahar's family. And that's how they start, their lives start intertwining into each other. It's the story is about human rights, protection of human rights, and the whole idea behind it is to bring attention to what's happening within the country, because we do a lot of business with Saudi Arabia. And yes, we should not dictate to other countries how they should live their lives. But at the same time, we cannot close our eyes when we see miscarriage of justice. Mm. For example, there was a 19-year-old girl who got raped, and they were going to flog her. Not only did she get raped, but they were going to flog her. And so many Western leaders got involved because of activists who started a petition, and they made sure everybody knows what's happening. And so then they changed this poor girl's sentence. It's like, it's not bad enough that somebody attacked you, you know, and then you have this issue of getting beaten.
Right.
Because you're at fault. They blame you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is not new. It happened recently to another girl who got raped by a bunch of men. And a lot of times the sentence on the girl is much heavier. Not only that, they forced this particular girl got pregnant. They made her have a child, and they put her in prison. So it's just, it's very frustrating.
Do you think that the injustices towards women are basically some of the biggest going on in that country?
Yes, it is, the injustice against women. But what we have to also realize is this is just as hard as men, because, for example, when I was doing my research, this Australian man was communicating with a Saudi woman through the internet, and it was, from what I read, it was innocent, or maybe it wasn't. He was thrown in jail for that. So it's hard on men too, because they're not allowed to. There's this segregation of sex, and there are certain things they're not allowed to do. So a lot of times they end up getting flogged because of getting in contact with a woman to whom they're not related.
It's so brutal.
It is. It's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough. And why shouldn't men and women talk? I mean, it's not real. You know, it's not realistic to separate the two. Another thing that I notice is, how is this going to affect the woman and the man, because they don't have a lot of contact with each other. So how do they understand each other? How is that going to work when they get married? Oh, because they don't date, you know, how there's going to be a lot of issues that are going to be brought up when you separate the two.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's
uh-huh.
like the yin and yang. You can't separate the two.
Absolutely. You know, romance is a big subject for you as well. You bring romance into your novels, but I think that probably springs from a deeper passion that you have that is really about the interpersonal relationship of men and women.
Yeah, it's important, and it's part of everyday life. I mean, you know, again, another interviewer was saying, well, take the romance out, and I was like, why? Because do you take it out of your life when you live your everyday life?
Right.
You know what I mean? What do? You just cut it off every, you know, and you say, oh, okay, for 2 years, I'm just going to cut everything off and just live a different life. Well, it's art, and art is life, and life is art. It's all intermingled, so it's not realistic for me to cut it out.
Mm-hmm. No, you're writing exactly how you're supposed to be writing.
Yeah.
And you're hitting the audience that you're supposed to be hitting, and your books are getting great reviews and I think a great reception. So you're right on target.
Thanks. I mean, I write what I believe in, and I hope that people will like it, you know.
Absolutely. So, okay, book two, The Dawn of Saudi, book one, Lemon Curd. What's when can we expect the third?
The third book is going to be a while.
Mm-hmm.
I've started the research on it. I haven't really actually started the story, and part of the reason is that we're moving into social media where when I was working on my first book and my second book, social media was important, but not as important as today. Now it's extremely important, so it's taking a lot of my time away from what I want to work on, but you can't ignore it. So I'm trying to figure out a balance and how to organize everything. I'm at that stage. Once I get my my things organized, then everything will flow much more smoothly. And hopefully within, I want to say within 2 years, I'll have another book out, a year or two. Depending on, hopefully sooner than 2 years, depending on how well I can organize, get a handle of, on the social media.
On the social media. Well, that still is pretty close. I think it's an, it's very interesting, the whole social media and social networking world that has just kind of opened up. And I think that it seems to me anyway, because I have a hard time, I struggle with time management as well, and it's almost like you really have to fine-tune and know what is going to work in terms of social media. There's just so much out there, and so you have to find really where you want to hone in and focus.
Yes, you can, like, be on 10 do 10 different things. So it's really important to pick and choose. And, you know, you're going to make mistakes. So it just comes with experience. I honestly don't think that a lot of businesses, for example, many are on Twitter, and many have not seen any rate of return.
I've heard that Twitter is just kind of, it's falling away. It was expected to be really big and successful, and it's just not producing results.
That's not true.
Really?
Yeah, it actually does produce results, but it takes time, because what we have to realize is we're constantly bombarded with marketing, where we're learning to tune things out. And a lot of companies are learning that we're moving toward a different direction where you actually have to connect with the customer. And in order to connect with them, they end up being on Twitter, because you start having followers and you start listening to them and you're communicating with them all the time. And when you like each other, then you go, you end up going, oh, I wonder who that person is. For example, like I started, this lawyer started following me and I started following the lawyer back. Now, if I like the content and things that he covers, for example, and down the line I have some legal issues, well, I'm going to contact him, going, oh, I know him. You know, so it's all about connection. The same thing with companies. You know, there are lots of retail companies and magazines and newspapers. And you, if you like what you read, that's how you make your connection. So I don't think you should spend 100% of your time on Twitter. I think you need to find a balance. And that's the trouble that I'm having right now, because the more and more I got into it, I was spending too much time. So you need to balance that by writing a blog and doing that and connecting with people outside the virtual world. So I just think life has gotten so difficult as opposed to years ago, because you only dealt with one world. Now we're dealing with two worlds. You have the virtual world, and you have the actual people that you can touch and talk to.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So I guess, you know, in terms of Twitter, what I hear you saying is just make sure you have a strong point of view and you just carry that throughout all your content.
Right. Make sure that you have content, because if you don't have content, people are not going to be interested in you.
Yeah.
But if you provide information that's going to help people move forward, it could be how to eat right, how to meditate, how to take care of your health, whatever, you know. But you're providing them with information that's interesting and that's going to help them, then it's going to be successful. Again, you have to balance it with other areas of marketing.
I think that's some really great advice for new authors and really anyone that wants to do online marketing. So you've had some pretty good success over the internet in terms of marketing and publicity?
I have both outside and inside. On the internet, when you start marketing, people really get to know who you are and what you're about. because a lot you hit a different audience. And, for example, I was at the L.A. Times Festival of Books, so there were a lot of people visiting my booth and learning about what it is that I do and what it is that other authors do and other publishers do. So it was a combination of connecting with the people outside, because not everybody is on the Internet.
Mm-hmm,
and the people who are on the Internet, a lot of times they're glued to their computers. They're not on the outside. So... yeah, I think it's important. But do I think that that's the only way to go? No. You need to do a combination of different. You need to, for example, you need to be on Twitter. Pick a few things. Have a blog. Be on Twitter. Be on Facebook. And then go outside and connect with people. Go to conferences and seminars and take classes where you're making that connection. You need all of that together. It's very, very time consuming.
It really is. It's a whole business and a whole life unto itself.
It is.
Yeah.
But then what we have to always remember is not to take ourselves seriously, to take breaks, to enjoy our family and the life around us. Because, you know, the important thing is that to like what you do, but to keep your balance and to, you know, just to enjoy life, because I think life is all about experience.
And it goes by so quick.
Very quickly, very, very quickly. And I think when you're younger, you don't realize how fast it goes. You think that you're going to be around forever, and that's not the case. So enjoy the people around you as much as you enjoy your work.
I love that. I think those are some great parting thoughts, actually. So I want to just mention your website again, Homa. It's thedawnofsadi.com, and then your personal website is homaporaskari.com.
That is correct.
And so thank you so much, Homa. It is just always such a pleasure to talk with you. I hope that you come out with your third book sooner so we'll get a chance to talk sooner than 2 years.
I that's what I'm going to push for.
Good. Good. And I'm going to go to your website and sign up for your blogs as well, because I love your point of view, and I think that you really have a lot to say. I know you're a part of some really interesting organizations, Amnesty International, the ACLU. You know, you really are at the forefront of the human rights issues. So I appreciate all that you've had to talk with us about today.
Oh, thank you. I've enjoyed talking with you and getting to know you, and this has been a wonderful interview.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time.
Oh, you bet. And good luck with The Dawn of Saudi. Fantastic book.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Homa.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, listeners, that's been Homa Porasgari. Her new book, The Dawn of Saudi, is available now, published, I believe, in the summer of 2009. You can find out more about it at thedawnofsaudi.com, as well a lot more about Homa and her work and her other endeavors at homaporaskari.com. So, fascinating interview. I know that you've enjoyed it. I certainly have. So I want to thank you for tuning in, staying with us today on Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. And until next time.